Faith Middleton, and this show is about the richness of life. We're going to be talking about the new science of building brain power. Thanks for listening in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including the East End of Long Island. Here's what our guest, New York Times science reporter Dan Hurley, decided to do. He studied research showing you can significantly increase your IQ level. And he found researchers who say that's nonsense. Well, Dan Hurley offered himself as a human guinea pig, road testing the higher IQ methods on himself. The result? He says he increased his fluid intelligence level by a whopping 16%. Well, what is fluid intelligence? The techniques Dan used came from leading researchers at Harvard, Oxford, University of Chicago, and the National Institutes of Health. He interviewed 200 scientists. Some techniques are new, some tried and true. We have them listed now at our show website, WNPR.org. Search programs for the Faith Middleton Show at WNPR.org right now. Do those computerized memory games do anything useful to our brains? Here's one that one of Dan's findings. This is no doubt will be considered controversial. A nicotine patch made him smarter, Hurley says. Interesting stuff coming your way in this hour. Dan Hurley, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Faith.
Your book is so well written. It is fascinating in its content, but the way you wrote it, too. It's just terrific. You're welcome. So let's get at something. There's a tendency in the United States, you say, in terms of our history, to look at intelligence in a kind of dark way.
Well, you know, on the one hand, a lot of Hollywood stars have made themselves look great by pretending to be dumb, you know, mm-hmm. Arnold Schwarzenegger, Sylvester Stallone, even the fact that both of them are actually really smart. I mean, Stallone wrote Rocky, and yet he plays a stupid guy, as though, you know, being somehow unintelligence means more decent and honest. But the opposite view is that going back 100 years, scientists, the beginning of genetics, all the institutes that are now about genetics used to be about eugenics. So 100 years ago, people thought it was the most liberal, forward-thinking idea that we were going to have people of low intelligence stop having babies, they were going to get forcibly sterilized, and then we would only have intelligent people, and wouldn't that be great for the human race?
Can I just jump in on that part? Because
yeah.
I was astounded that the list of people who championed this idea of taking so-called imbeciles or feeble-minded people, as they were called back in the 60s, and forcing them to have this sterilization. This was backed by Margaret Sanger, J.H. Kellogg, Alexander Graham Bell. It was sanctioned, as you point out, by the U.S. Supreme Court and funded by the Carnegie Institution and the Rockefeller Foundation.
Yeah, it's a really dark history. And, you know, it started, eugenics started in Britain, came over to the U.S. where, you know, Americans loved it and said, this is great. We're going to fix our society. And back when, you know, people thought Irish folks were, you know, maybe even some thought subhuman, you would hear these incredible things said back, you know, 100 years ago. And then, of course, by the 30s, it went back over the ocean and landed in Germany, and the Nazis took hold of it and ran with that, and instead of just sterilizing people, they were then murdering tens of thousands of cognitively impaired people.
So as you point out, to use your sentence, in fact, you say intelligence has a brand problem. Has that affected whether we as a society in this country look at intelligence as a moving target? Or do you think that's why we have seen intelligence, the IQ, as a static thing?
Well, you know, I think, you know, intelligence by the 1960s, especially with some people who wanted to make a big deal out of racial differences and, you know, reported racial differences, and folks just basically got sick and tired of hearing about it and really didn't want to hear about IQ. And we moved on as a society to get more interested in emotional intelligence, things like grit and determination, family support, community support, and this notion of IQ became, you know, like something you'd whisper about. And yet, if you walk through any bookstore, you know, I was just in Barnes & Noble today, and there is a whole section about doing better at these standardized tests, which a lot of that is, in fact, intelligence is going to have a huge impact on your performance on these tests. So it's really become a dark cloud has settled over it. A lot of people think that anyone interested in IQ has got to be conservative and, you know, really old school. And yet, you know, if we want to help people, if we want to bridge the achievement gap between, you know, the wealthier and poorer people, between blacks and whites and Hispanics, if you want to make a difference with people that have suffered brain damage or were born cognitively disabled due to maybe something like Down syndrome, you've got to take this on, and there's no way to do it but you know, just go, yes, IQ still matters. It's a useful skill. It's like anything else in our, you know, toolkit of things that humans find useful, and increasing it, if you can do that, is a very big deal.
Okay, and we're going to see how this happened to you, because I know you offered yourself up as a human guinea pig, and you talk about this in the book. I always think that there are many, many kinds of intelligence. So you say that the two of the most important would be fluid intelligence, because that's what increased in you after doing certain things, and then this other thing called crystallized intelligence. So let's start with crystallized. What is that?
So basically, one is your ability to learn, and the other is the stuff you have learned. So when you were born, you know nothing, right? You've got no facts. You don't know how to do anything. And yet, you have this incredible capacity to learn. So kids come into the world not even knowing what language is, or that it is, or that it makes any sense. No idea, right? Mm-hmm. And yet they hear people going blah, 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 and they figure it out all by themselves. In a year, kids are really understanding what their parents are saying, and some of them are starting to come up with words themselves.
So which intelligence is that?
So that is fluid intelligence. Mm-hmm. That's problem solving, pattern detecting. It's, you know, your ability to make sense of things, critical thinking, analytical thinking.
So Sherlock Holmes.
Sherlock Holmes on all levels, whether it's just what are those people talking about, what is this a joker on the radio saying right now, it's even while you're driving, paying attention to all the things going on the road, you know, being able to make sense and see patterns and figure out what's what. Crystallized intelligence is the stuff you learn.
So that's the one useful for the Jeopardy contestant.
Absolutely. And, you know, you could say the fact that a computer was finally able, Deep Blue, from IBM was finally able to beat people playing at Jeopardy was considered a big deal, because you had to feed so much information in to this supercomputer. Okay, they did it. But what people do, which is what computers are still terrible at, is making sense of things, figuring out problems that no one's ever shown them before, that they've never seen. That's one of the most interesting, unique abilities of people. Like if someone says, if a psychologist says, here, sir, sit down, I want you to do this funny little test. Now, if you see this thing, I want you to press that. If you see the other thing, press this, and do it for 3 minutes. People can do that without any problem, most people. Where animals, computers can't, you know, it takes forever to get them to figure this stuff out. Mm-hmm. So, as people get older, they collect more and more crystallized knowledge, information, but their fluid intelligence tends to be decreasing after their mid-20s. So finding a way to increase your fluid intelligence, your problem-solving ability, your ability to learn and make sense is just a huge thing if it's possible.
So you talk about these two researchers, Yegi and Bushkal?
Yeah. Actually, she pronounces her name. One of the biggest discoveries
Yagi.
I made in researching the book was how to pronounce this lady's name. It's actually Susan Yaki. She's from Switzerland. And so they did this study where they someone had done a small study suggesting that you could train something called working memory, and after just a few weeks, increase your fluid intelligence, which 10 years ago was considered absolutely impossible. You can't increase your fluid intelligence, was the belief. So they put together this study where they had about 50 participants do something called the NBAC, where you're keeping track of a moving list of items and remembering if there's a repeat one time ago, two times ago, three times ago. This is why it's called the NBAC, means like one back, two back, three back, four back. And they had people do it for a total of 11 hours over a few weeks. And after they did this, their fluid intelligence scores increased 40%, which was considered astonishing. It was published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, one of the most prominent scientific journals.
And
it was considered like, you know, it was taken by psychologists to be, you know, one of the most radical findings of the past decade.
And here's my question. Does that fluid intelligence learned through that training hold? Does it stay with you, or must you keep training to hang on?
So that first study was done in 2008, right? So now we're 7 years later. It's 2014, or 6 years later, if I can just learn to do the math. And so we wouldn't know if it holds longer than 6 years if someone did a study that, you know, the day after that first one came out. What a lot of papers seem to suggest, there's other studies involving, say, elderly adults who are given different kinds of training, and those effects have lasted as long as 10 years. In this one major national study that involved a couple thousand people.
Wow.
And that was considered pretty astonishing.
And you say also, Dan, that 75 other randomized placebo-controlled studies have now been published in peer-reviewed scientific journals. And these confirm that cognitive training improves substantially your intellectual abilities.
Yeah, and actually, since the book, since I finished writing the book, you know, it's almost a year since my actual research and writing of the book was finished. You know, it was published just a few months ago. But, of course, you got to finish writing it before they can publish it. And in this period of time, I would say it's crazy how many studies are pouring out. There's about 10 new studies every month now on this subject because it's the area of research is just so hot. And most of the study, essentially all of the studies published since I stopped working on the book have been positive. It's just piling up. I mean, I would say there's probably now about 150 studies all pointing in the same direction. It's really stunning.
Okay, we're going to talk about what happened to you when you took on some of these tasks, what happened to your fluid intelligence. Stay with us, Dan. We're going to take a short break and then be right back to talk about your book, Smarter. I'm Faith Middleton. Our guest is science journalist Dan Hurley. He's author of this new book, Smarter, about the new science of building brain power at any age. Dan has been a reporter for a long time looking at science. He's looked at all the studies about being smarter in terms of moving fluid intelligence, IQ. And you see some researchers saying it's all nonsense. You see a growing number of researchers saying there is absolutely something to this. So Dan Hurley, our guest, decides that he's going to try these techniques and these programs that are out there to see what happens. And so we're about to tell you the results of some of that. So, Dan, some of these tests, when I read about them, I think I could never do that. You know, and I gather when you first started these tests, you know, you felt the same way.
They're all, you know, the NBAC is diabolical. I must say, it's most people's impression when they there's websites where you can find it, and you know, if you just do the letter N-BACK, mm-hmm. you're going to be able to find it in a second. And most people's reaction is just, ah, please get it away from me. But what's very strange about it is that if you just play it for one or two sessions, and each one is only a couple minutes long, you'll immediately begin getting the hang of it. Everybody does. And as you start going, you immediately start going, oh, I see. I'm getting the hang of this. And, you know, it's all these kinds of psychological tests, you know, there's no value to them. No one would learn them for the fun of it. But what they're really good at is, in a really concentrated form, helping you do the things that you need to do anyway in life, which is to keep track of multiple items, to allow some information to go out of your immediate awareness for a moment. Like if you're multiplying 29 times 36, you know, the way I learned it is first I've got to multiply the 9 times the 6. You know, and I got to take that 9 times 6 is 54, I remember from my times table. And I put a 4 down, and then I have to carry the 5. And now I'm like, wait a minute. What two numbers am I going to multiply again now? And this is why it's so you just want to scream that it seems impossible. But everybody, as they start doing these, gets better, and it turns out that they help you in normal life, just thinking straight and making sense of life and understanding what your spouse is saying and figuring out what to do when your car battery dies and, you know, maybe doing better on the job and understanding what the heck your boss actually wants of you and being able to write that paper and all the things that we do in life every day.
Well, let's go down the list and talk about the things that you tried and also the things that you've been researching in terms of the data from these intelligence researchers. So one of your findings after going through all these tests yourself is, and then we're going to get to whether your fluid intelligence level or to what degree it rose up. So you say that important thing is to do things you're no good at, things that are new, challenging, activities of almost any kind end up strengthening the mind.
Well, you know, that was really my takeaway from looking at all these kinds of things that seem to help, is that just doing the same thing that you've been doing, that we're all really good at as adults. You know, Faith, you're good at being a radio interviewer, but you know, can you dance the to salsa music? Can you play chess? Can you play the tuba? All these different things that are really novel experiences. I mean, this is what, you know, if they want to help, if they want to challenge a mouse to improve its cognitive abilities, they know what they do is they put it into a novel environment. And for us, you know, most adults basically have reached the point where they've succeeded at getting out of novel environments. Childhood is all about novel things that you've never done before, and learning this and learning that and all these other challenging things. And by the time you're a grown-up, you're supposed to be just doing what you're good at. But actually, keeping your mind fresh requires trying things that you've never done before.
So we have this list posted at our website, WNPR.org, search programs for the Faith Middleton Show. Next thing, and this is an old school one, physical exercise does, in fact, jog the brain.
Absolutely. And I like the way you put that, jog the brain. Yes. Exercise is one of the best proved ways to improve your cognitive abilities. You might not think that by looking at all the football players and hockey players out there, but physical exercise, not just cardiovascular, you know, and not just doing the same old thing you've been doing. I'm sure a lot of your NPR listeners are joggers, you know, and go out or bicycle. Adding something new to it that you have not been doing for 20 years would be great.
Cross-training.
Especially some level of strength training. You know, just picking up those little weights and doing these things. I try to describe in the book, I have lots of links to the kinds of things that work. But, you know, going to the Y and getting on some of those machines or just picking up some of those free weights or swimming, anything that's building muscles seems to directly influence the formation of new neuron.
How about this one, Dan? This is Dan Hurley, is author of this book, Smarter, a New York Times writer and science reporter. Moderate alcohol can help.
You know, that's a finding from Lumosity, and any NPR listener these days has heard these ads over and over and over. Lumosity, built by neuroscientists. And Lumosity really has been designed by neuroscientists, and some of the researchers I've spoken to have done the studies that these folks base their games on. And they've analyzed the performance of people who, you know, they've gotten 40, 50 million users. So they can look at that data, and then they've asked lifestyle questions of some of their members, and they have found that people that drink moderately, one or two drinks a day, you know, 5-6 drinks a week, seem to perform better than people who do not drink or who drink more than that.
Why do you think that is?
You know, heck if I know. Alcohol is certainly not going to be a cognitive enhancer. That might be a proxy for some sort of you know, lifestyle
appeal.
I don't know. I do know that there's a lot of research showing that both coffee and, crazily, nicotine, not cigarettes, but nicotine in a patch, seems to improve cognitive abilities. And that's kind of a frightening prospect. We certainly don't think of, you know, someone who's been smoking 40 years as having any benefits from it. But there are these nicotinic receptors in the brain, and it does seem to have some benefits to the brain, which is part of the reason why, you know, before everyone learned how bad cigarettes were, you'd have writers and people trying to solve problems smoking like chimneys.
So you say that the nicotine patches improved attention and focus with little to no addictive potential?
Well, what's really odd about pure nicotine, in animal studies, it's hard to get an animal addicted to just plain nicotine. Cigarettes are crazy addictive. We all know that. But nicotine all by itself is not that addictive for animals. It's only, at best, mildly. And usually they have to add other things to get the animal actually addicted to it. So, and in fact, the only reason that these nicotine patches and gum are approved by the FDA is for smoking cessation, which they work short-term, but a study came out last year showing that long-term, people that use the nicotine patches are do not quit at any better rate.
Mm-hmm.
So the one thing it's approved for, it doesn't seem to really do.
That's so interesting. And I guess it also depends on the delivery system, because we've seen conflicting reports about these e-cigarettes, which are a delivery system for nicotine, but the vapor now is thought to have some problems. I know you know about this.
Absolutely. And the e-cigarettes, actually, that whole phenomenon has grown up so quickly that when I was researching my book, they were barely on the radar screen, and they've just become a huge thing. So, you know, I do not want to be seen as someone who is by any in any manner supporting the use of cigarettes or tobacco or nicotine. It's just an interesting finding, and you know, I'm just reporting the science.
Yeah, the reason I brought it up, I think, is what went through my mind, of course, is, oh, are we going to have perhaps some overachieving types saying to their children or their athletes, here, I think you should wear this nicotine patch before you take your SATs, or,
God,
would anybody be crazy enough to do something like that? I suppose,
well,
yes.
Well, you're talking to someone who is crazy enough.
As
part of my regimen of all the things that I did, including, you know, learning a musical instrument and doing physical exercise and doing these online brain games, I did wear a nicotine patch. So,
and did you feel sharper?
Excuse me.
Did you feel sharper?
It seemed to help. I felt no sensation. I didn't feel dizzy. I didn't feel hyper. I didn't feel anything like that. But on days when I was wearing the lowest dose, the 7-milligram nicotine patch, which I, you know, just bought over the counter at a CVS, it seemed like I was more productive in my work. And, you know, that's a very subjective report, but I definitely had, over a period of a couple months of trying it on some days and forgetting to use it on others, it certainly seemed like the days I used it, I was doing better.
All right, we're going to, Dan, stay where you are, please. Dan Hurley, who is a science reporter and works for the New York Times, among others, and we're going to talk about his book, Smarter, how our intelligence, our IQ, fluid intelligence actually can be improved with this training that you're seeing around in different places. Stay with us. I'm Faith Middleton. Want to thank our talented staff, senior producer Lori Mack and producer Jonathan McNichol. Thank you so much for the work you do. And thank you for listening. We are in conversation with Dan Hurley, who is an award-winning science journalist, author of the New York Times Magazine articles of A Drug for Down Syndrome, Can You Make Yourself Smarter? That was the article, Jumper Cables for the Mind. This was the series that so many people were talking about, became part of his work of Smarter Brains for PBS, where he's featured. His new book is called Smarter. It's about the new science of building brain power. And we mentioned nicotine patches as having a good effect. What about drugs, pharmaceuticals, drugs like Adderall for attention deficit disorder?
You know, so those are mostly going to keep people in their seat, doing their work and paying attention. There's not a great deal of evidence that they actually make anyone actually, quote-unquote, smarter.
So focus. They're good on focus.
Yeah, it really, you know, you can't do your work if you're distracted, you know, and being more, if you're looking out the window, you're certainly not doing the work that's in front of you. So if you're in school, if you're taking tests, you know, for kids that are ADHD or adults, these drugs have been shown to help. But in terms of actually making people quote unquote smarter, they don't do that.
So Dan, you had took a bunch of tests, and then went through various methods of brain training. We're talking about some of your findings now. And then you get retested again to see if your fluid intelligence level has improved. So let's get to that punchline before we go through more of these findings. Did your fluid intelligence level improve, and by how much?
Well, there's this test. It's considered the gold standard of fluid intelligence tests. It's called the Ravens Advanced Progressive Matrices. This is, if you've ever seen one of these, it's like a little, like imagine like a tic-tac-toe board, and you see on the top a little circle, a bigger circle, the biggest circle. A little square, a bigger square, the biggest square. And on the bottom row, it's a little triangle, a bigger triangle. What should the last one be? Durr, a big triangle. And the first one, like that, is comically obvious and you know, almost, you know, anyone could do it. And as it starts getting, by the third one, as you're going down the list of these, it starts getting more and more and more complicated, to the point where by the tenth one, lots of people can't figure it out, and the further it goes, you know, you've got to be some kind of code-cracking genius to really be able to figure it out.
So on the Raven Advanced Test, how did you improve?
16% better.
16.
And this was, you know, based on one version of it on the first test, and another version with a different set of questions about, and I did it about a year apart. So that seems pretty good, and I certainly felt like my work benefited, and I felt like I was functioning, you know, as it were, firing on all cylinders at home, at work, with friends, everything that I do. The 16% gain seemed, if that's what you can do from, you know, playing some of these computerized games and doing some of these things, it seemed like a great benefit.
What about in terms of your emotional intelligence, what Daniel Goleman has made so famous? Do you feel like that improved also?
Well, there are not a multitude of brains that we have in our skull. We've got one brain, and it's all wired together. And the same part of the brain that deals with complex, high IQ type things is this frontal lobe, which is the exact same part of the brain that is doing all this social and emotional sorting things out, right? Like, what should I say to this person? Should I... am I going to yell right now? Am I going to step back and try to understand what this person's saying to me? Keeping your wits together is the same level. If you've ever noticed, when you think of the emotional level of a rocket scientist, all those guys at NASA, they're a pretty cool-headed bunch, right? And you might almost call them you could jokingly say they don't seem to have a pulse, but actually, the more IQ you have, for most people, the better your EQ is, your emotional intelligence. And it's a myth that we all like to talk about the crazy smart guy who the Unabomber. Some brilliant guy from Harvard. And, that's one person, but any people of all intelligence levels can develop schizophrenia, which is what that guy developed. So for most people, being more intelligent is going to pay off in having better emotional control.
Did you feel that?
I absolutely felt that. Okay. I got, my daughter was going through some last year as I was doing all this work. My daughter was going through a severe emotional crisis. She really had some medical issues. And I felt like it really helped me to handle all of that. It was pretty challenging. And I absolutely feel like it's helped me on every level.
Oh, good, Dan. Transcranial direct current stimulation. I've been reading about this, and you tried this.
It seems like something out of science fiction. It involves people hear this electricity brain, and they think you're getting direct voltage. And you're going to be in convulsions, and you're not going to think straight afterwards. This is the amount of electricity from a pen light, the kind of thing that a very low wattage battery would do. And you can barely feel it when they apply these things to your head. And I went to Harvard's neuromodulation laboratory to get this done by the researchers there. And there are hundreds of studies saying that this improves all kinds of conditions from stroke recovery, recovery after traumatic brain injury, helping people with a memory, emotional balance, all sorts of things. And I found that when I was doing that NBAC that we talked about earlier,
yeah,
I jumped in my ability to do that, like right while I was getting treated with that. It's bizarre because you can barely feel it, and it almost seems like something out of you know, you almost expect to be on candid camera, like someone's going to come out from the closet and say, ha, 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 this is all a big joke. Of course you can't put a little tiny electric current and get smarter. But by golly, there's scientists around the world at leading institutions researching this, and it just looks, you know, like a really important new way to help people.
But not widely available yet, right?
It's absolutely not widely available. You can see people online who try it themselves, and I think they're...
Try it themselves?
Yeah, because you can take these things that are used to stimulate your muscles and just put them on your skull, and you can read the studies, which, you know, the studies are, many of them are online and available for reading, and there are, you know, these people, they're like life hackers, and they're trying to make themselves into Superman, and they try it themselves, and they look like they're out of the cast of Jackass. I mean, it's just scary. I fear for them. I don't think it's a good idea. I mean,
yeah.
you brain and electricity, be careful.
So these music lessons, language lessons, turn out to make us smarter.
I learned to play the Renaissance lute, and that was the most fun of all the things that I did. I had seen a guy playing a lute back when I was 19 and said, gee, one day I want to learn, and I decided to take lessons. And there are a number of studies. You know, the music training, there's not as many studies on it. There's dozens of studies on these computerized brain games. There's hundreds of studies on transcranial direct current stimulation. There's only a handful of studies on music training, but it sure seems to make sense. It definitely fits in with all of the other things that you're learning to do multiple things at once. It's a novel task. It's very challenging. And I found it was great fun.
Science journalist Dan Hurley, author of this new book, Smarter, about the new science of building brain power at any age. So we said, or you said, computerized working memory games can be highly effective. And here was one. We have lots of shows on this subject. We're very interested in mindfulness meditation. And so I was intrigued with this chapter in particular about its effect on the military, people in all walks of life, and particularly with this, who's the famous researcher who was so surprised by the findings?
There are lots of researchers who are doing it. You know, there's people in Oregon, in Washington, in D.C., mindfulness meditation was the one thing of all the things that I tried that I basically failed at because I was trying so many things at once that, you know, with my daughter in the house and we have a little dog that barks and my wife, and it was just madness to try to sit for 20 minutes in silence and doing these exercises. I lasted about 3 weeks, and, you know, that one fell by the wayside.
Here we go. I know who it is. Michael Posner, professor emeritus at the University of Oregon, former chair of its psychology department, one of the most respected psychologists in the United States. Hundreds of scientific papers. Gets awarded the National Medal of Science by President Obama at the White House. This is the kind of, and he said, I'm quoting him, I was completely surprised by the results of these papers on the benefits of mindfulness. Most studies assumed it would take months or years to see effects. We saw changes in the white matter of the brain after 2 weeks.
Yeah, it's pretty, you know, what I think what's great about all of this research is first of all, that these are really serious scientists. These are not, this is not your sort of alternative medicine, feel good, happy talk kind of stuff. These are skeptical, serious, sober scientists doing, publishing their work in major journals, And they all have been finding that through a variety of means that you can significantly enhance your abilities. And we're talking everything from kids to, you know, elderly people, middle-aged, disabled, high level. The military is working with folks, you know, trying to improve the abilities of, like, spy master type people to help them in analysis work. So I think, you know, my book has gotten some pushback from the very few arch skeptics who keep saying, no, it's not proved yet. No, it's not proved yet. And that is certainly true, that it's, you know, everything.
What do you mean by it?
That you can increase your cognitive ability.
Mm-hmm, okay.
It remains the case that there are still people basically trying to say that the Earth is flat, that, you know, you can't do anything, you're born with what you got, and that's that. And, you know, I think the upshot of these hundreds of studies is that is untrue, that people can help themselves, that things in your environment and things that you set out to do, you can improve your abilities. I mean, why else do, kids that get adopted into homes where the parents will read to them and expose them to books and, you know, really give them a stimulating environment, that poof, suddenly their IQs are far, far higher than they might have been.
We see that with, we were looking at studies that had been done by researchers in marriage counseling, and they saw that the couples who did the best were ones who were doing, engaging in new activities together. You know, new places to visit, courses to take, things to read, concerts to see. The more they did that kind of thing together, the better the relationship was. Richer, deeper.
And that makes sense to me. You know, I think doing the, you know, and that's in addition to make, even if doing all these novel activities don't make you smarter, they're sure a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And it's inspiring. You know, I really found it was just fun and so much more. You know, it's like, wow, you don't have to settle into some rut. And, you know, even as a science writer, you know, I'm not immune to sitting in front of the TV and watching for the, you know, Die Hard for the 10th time. But getting out and doing these fun, interesting new things is, you know, that's what life is all about.
Yeah, and to say it always has to be new would be silly, because we've talked to a million conductors, orchestra conductors, you know, the greatest in the world, who have said coming back to the same symphony, just like the novel, at a different age, you mm-hmm. discover new things. So it's interesting from that perspective. So to conclude with all of this, doing things that are new to you, physical exercise, moderate alcohol, music lessons, language lessons, transcranial direct current stimulation, nicotine patches, computerized working memory games, mindfulness meditation, and then this. Combining 2, 3, or more of all of these we've talked about is the most effective approach.
That's what the research is saying, yes.
Okay. Thank you so much, Dan. Good contribution to the world. Thank you very much for being on the show.
Thank you, Faith.
Dan Hurley's author of Smarter, about the new research into intelligence and how it can grow at any age. As always, this show is about the richness of life. You can find the books, people, great recipes, value wines, and cocktails we feature right now at WNPR.org, including Dan's list for things that will make you smarter. Click on Programs. In New Haven, I'm Faith Middleton.